Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, June 2nd, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or listening through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever discovered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that webpage, click on the link that says Start Here in the upper left-hand corner. It will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. It's a tool I've been using to great effect in my life for 17 years now to improve the quality of my life and relationships and effectively turn any negative emotional state that I experience into part of the infallible guidance system that we've all been given. And that actual tool itself is available for a simple click and download. It's a PDF file, and you can get it just by clicking and downloading. Print it off, copy it, use it as often as you'd like. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have called in and either been stepped through the actual use of that worksheet process for a problem they're experiencing in their life, or discuss some of the principles that underlie the power of that work. And at times people have called in to give powerful testimonials about how the actual application of that tool has benefited them immeasurably, positively in their lives. And we hope you do that soon and often. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see a glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And do that and get yourself some questions and comments or testimonials and give us a call, 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, it'll put a little question mark by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code. We're also in the middle of doing our Course in Miracles workbook lessons for the year. This is the 153rd day of the year. And this is one of the lessons that seems to have doublespeak in it that's so difficult for people. Today's lesson simply reads, in my defenselessness, my safety lies. The commentary reads, you who feel threatened by this changing world, by its twists of fortune and its bitter jests, its brief relationships and all of the, quote, gifts, close quotes, that it merely lends you to take them away, all of you should attend this lesson well. The truth is the world provides no safety. The world that you see is rooted in attack, and all of its gifts are seeming safety are just illusory deceptions. This world attacks and then attacks again. No peace of mind is possible where danger threatens thus. The world gives rise to but defensiveness, for threat brings anger. Anger makes attack seem reasonable, honestly provoked and righteously in the name of self-defense. Yet, is defensiveness a double threat? For it attests to my weakness. It sets up a system of defense that cannot work. Now we are the weak and still further undermined, for there is treachery without and still a greater treachery within the mind. The mind is now confused and knows not where to turn to find escape from its imaginings. So the essence is, if you can imagine that you can be hurt, then you start to imagine the threats, and then you're caught in the cycle of pretending that you can be hurt and pretending that the things that your mind creates as traps of thought are real and can actually hurt you and your true nature. It goes on to say, it is as if a circle held it fast, wherein another circle bound it and another one in that, until escape no longer can be hoped for or attained. Attack, defense, defense, attack, these become the circles of the hours and days that bind the mind in heavy bands with steel with iron overlaid, returning but to start again. There seems to be no break nor ending in the ever-tightening grip of the imprisonment upon the mind. Defenses are the costliest of all prices which the ego would exact. In your defense lies madness in a form so grim that any hope of sanity seems to be but an idle dream beyond what is possible. The sense of threat the world encourages is so much deeper and so far beyond the frenzy and intensity of which you can conceive that you have no idea of all the devastation it has wrought. You are literally its slave. You know not what you do in fear of it. You do not understand how much you have been made to sacrifice, you who feel its iron grip upon your heart. You do not realize what you have done to sabotage the holy peace of the Creator by your defensiveness. For you behold the Son of all creation as but a victim to be attacked by fantasies, by dreams, and by the illusions he himself has made. Yet helpless in their presence, needful only of defense by still more fantasies and dreams by which illusions of his safety comfort him. Defenselessness is strength. When you realize your perfect safety, therein lies your strength. When you realize there is nothing in you that can be damaged, hurt, chipped, bent, rusted, broken, faded in any way, that your true nature remains as the Creator created you, it testifies to the recognition of the Christ mind in you. Perhaps you will recall the text maintains that choice is always made between Christ's strength and your own weakness as you see yourself as apart from him. Defenselessness can never be attacked. Your perfect safety can never be attacked because it recognizes so great attack is folly or a silly game a tired child might play when he becomes too sleepy to remember what he wants. Defensiveness is weakness. It proclaims you have denied the Christ and come to fear his Father's anger. What you can save now from your delusion of an angry God, whose fearful image you believe you see at work in all the evils of the world. What can save you from that? What but your illusions could defend you now when it is all but illusions that you fight? You will not play such childish games today. For our true purpose is to save the world, and we would not exchange foolishness for the endless joy and function that the world offers us. We would not let our happiness slip by because a fragment of a senseless dream happened to cross our minds, and we mistook the figures in that senseless dream for the Son of all creation. We look past dreams today, and we recognize that we need no defense because we have been created unassailable without all thought or wish or dream in which attack has any meaning. Now we cannot fear, for we have left all fearful thoughts behind. And in our perfect safety, in our defenselessness, we stand secure, serenely certain of our safety now, sure of our salvation, sure that we will fulfill our chosen purpose as our ministry extends its holy blessing through the world. So be still for a moment and in silence think, how holy is your purpose? How secure is your rest? How untouchable within its light? The Creator's ministers have chosen that the truth be with them. Who could possibly be holier than they? Who could be surer than that his or her happiness is fully guaranteed? And who could be more mightily protected? What defense could possibly be needed by the ones who are among the chosen ones of creation and creation's election of their own? It is the function of creation's extension to help brothers and sisters choose as they have done. The Creator has elected all, but few have come to realize the Creator's will is but their own will. And while you fail to teach what you have learned, salvation awaits and darkness holds the world in grim imprisonment. Nor will you learn that light has come to you and your escape has been accomplished, for you will not see the light until you offer that light to all of your brothers and sisters. As you take it from your hands, so will you recognize it as your own. As they take it from your hands, as you offer love, you get love. As you offer the light of the Christ mind to others, you realize your existence is within that Christ mind. Salvation can be thought of as a game that happy children play. It is designed by one who loves his children and who would replace their fearful toys with joyous games, which teach them that the game of fear is gone. The Creator's game instructs in happiness because there is no loser. Everyone who plays must win. And his winning is the gain to everyone insured. The game of fear is gladly laid aside when children come to see the benefit that salvation brings. So today, we pause for but a moment to play our final happy game on this earth, and then we take our rightful place where truth abides and games are meaningless. Let this day bring the last chapter closer to the world, that everyone may learn the tale he reads of terrifying destiny, defeat of all his hopes, his pitiful defense against a vengeance he cannot escape, is but a deluded fantasy. God's ministers have come to awaken him from the dark dreams that his story has evoked in his confused, bewildered memory. God's Son can smile at last on learning that this is not true. Today we practice in a form we will maintain for quite a while. We begin each day by giving our attention to the daily thought as long as possible. 5 minutes now becomes the least we give to preparation for a day in which salvation is the only goal we have. 10 would be better, 15 better still. And as distraction ceases to arise to turn us from our purpose, we will find that half an hour is too short a time to spend with God, with the Creator, with love. nor will we willingly give it less at night in great gratitude and joy. Each hour adds to our increasing peace as we remember to be faithful to the will we share with God. At times, perhaps a minute, even less, will be the most we can offer as the hour strikes. Sometimes we will forget. At other times, the business of the world will close on us, and we will be unable to withdraw a little while and turn our thoughts to God. Yet, when we can, we will observe our trust as ministers of God in hourly remembrance of our mission and God's love. And we will quietly sit by and wait on the Creator and listen to its voice and learn what it would have us do the hour that is yet to come, while thanking creation for all the gifts it has given us as the hour has gone by. In time with practice, we will never cease to think of Creator, the creation, its love, and hear its loving voice guiding our footsteps into quiet ways where you will walk in true, perfect safety and defenselessness. Today our theme is defenselessness. We clothe ourselves in it as we prepare to meet the day. Your practicing will now begin to take the earnestness of love to help you keep your mind from wandering from its intent. So be not afraid nor timid. There can be no doubt that you will reach your final goal. The ministers of the Creator can never fail, because the love and strength and peace that shine from them to all the brothers and sisters come from the source of all creation. These are its gifts to you. Defenselessness is all you need to give him in return. You lay aside what was never real to look on the Christ mind and see its complete, perfect safety, sinlessness, and defenselessness. Pam Grout's Course in Miracles Experiment Book, Lesson 153, reads the title of Blast Open Your Heart. She quotes Charles Einstein as saying, "We mistake punishment for justice, fighting for action." Pam writes, "I call Lesson 153, In My Defenselessness, My Safety Lies. I call this the PhD program. It lies 180 degrees from everything my culture teaches. I'm deeply conditioned by concepts of good and evil, perpetrators and victims. I must conquer the patriarchy, push back on corporate greed, punish the evildoers. In this lesson, I learned that viewing the world through this simplistic lens is to perpetuate the problem. By adding my blows to the humiliation of the bad guy, I wreak the very devastation I claim to be against." Quote, "But I can't just let them get away with it," close quote, "my ego will rail. Here's what I'm asked to do instead. Recognize that my so-called enemies, that the villains that I so deplore, are simply fragments of a senseless dream. They are but tiny pieces of the whole. Once I get my ruler out to measure, once I look closer, once I see the optical illusions, I notice that the, quote, other, close quotes, is actually me. To attack is to deny my own safety. Breaking ingrained cultural habits of separation takes practice. I have to disrupt the old story from within my heart. I must put away the toys of guilt, set aside the practice of conquest and control. As this lesson reminds me, I will not see the light until I offer it to all my brothers and sisters. So today I invest in the story of oneness. Instead of defensiveness, I will remember, I am a mirror of you, you are a mirror of me. In your shoes, my brother and sister, I would do as you do." So that's our lesson today and commentary from Pam Grout and her Course in Miracles Experiment Book, Lesson 153. And we have 38 minutes left to talk, comment, question, search for answers, host your suggestions. How can we support you? 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. I have I've mentioned the striking similarity that I discovered in the book by Thich Nhat Hanh about healing your inner child, and the similarity between that and somatic energy healing, holographic memory reprocessing, Bramson body journaling, much of the NET work, the DNMS work, which stands for dialectical needs meeting, DNMS strategies, whatever. It's a system that helps me look at the visions I have, the beliefs I have of my younger self as being damaged or broken or somehow inadequate. Developmental needs meeting strategies is the name of that technique, which is almost exactly the same as the core work from Diedrich Wolsack and his Choose Again program. And so I highlight again for us all to pay attention to the fact that whatever really works is just like everything else that really works. What truly works is like everything else that truly works. I wrote a blog post on that a few weeks back. So we had our support group last night, and we watched or listened to a series of the Q&A from the Way of Mastery. And again, the overlap, the idea that the Way of Mastery is simply a kinder, gentler version of the Course in Miracles. I hear that every time I listen to either one of the lessons from the Way of Mastery or one of the question and answer sessions that were recorded during those channelings. And the integrity of that book, both The Course in Miracles and The Way of Mastery, the way it feels to my eye and ear as a fractal or a hologram, where one part of the book essentially contains every other part of the book and vice versa. The whole book is contained in each little part. And the idea is this perfect safety that your true nature, this spiritual entity that we were talking about, the movie Who We Are, the documentary where it looks at Anita Morjani and her near-death or near-life experience, and Eben Alexander and his near-life and death experience, and the research around consciousness that while it some people attack it as not being hard science, it is exploring those aspects of our experience as human beings that cannot be described by a purely or explained by a purely mechanistic view, right? The idea that consciousness is nothing more than the byproduct of random neural firings and energies has been disproven many different ways, including these people who've had these near-death experiences or these death experiences, or as Michael Rice calls them, these near-life experiences, where everything our medical science knows about the way the brain functions and what's going on in these people's brains in the case of Evan Alexander, it was with pus and infection that had enveloped his brain, and there's no neural firings that they could trace. There's no biological functioning in the parts of the brain that would register consciousness, or that they had previously thought was responsible for creating consciousness. And yet, not only did he survive, but he came back with a very vivid, detailed story, and a story that included knowledge of things that were happening in and around the hospital during the time he was supposedly completely unavailable, in a coma, and only being kept alive through life support, and brain dead. Michael Rice, in one of his talks, Purpose, Personal Power, and Commitment, talks about how every one of us has a primary purpose that's the same as every other person, and that is to develop, and once it's been developed, then to strengthen a viable, conscious, spiritual body. That's the essence of this work, to understand that if you think you're just a hunk of protoplasm, then it probably is really important for you to get into an argument about what somebody says about your shirt being ugly, or somebody wanting to move into the lane of traffic that you're in and cutting you off. However, if you're aware that there's a lot more going on here than just the hunk of protoplasm that you call a body, then it doesn't matter so much what somebody else says or does, or the names they call you, or where they drive your car. What matters is your consciousness. What matters is your ability to become more and more aware at deeper and deeper levels of the potential for you to experience life and yourself in ways that go beyond what your conscious logical mind can experience and describe. And that's one of the things that if you listen to Evan Alexander's story or Anita Morjani's story, you read between the lines, they're saying a lot of words about what that experience was, but they're also trying to convey that our words are an inadequate tool for trying to describe that experience. And navigating through your human consciousness, your relationships with other human consciousness, is unfortunately something that we're not taught in our school systems. This is the kind of thing that I mentioned last week. I had a 15-year-old who sat in my office and said, why don't people teach this in school? If we're actually the ones that create our upset, and we're the only ones that have the secret to being happy or to ending our pain or fear or sadness, why isn't that being taught in school? It's a wonderful question. I don't choose to get into the philosophical argument about why it's not being taught, but I will acknowledge that the power of a 15-year-old coming to an awareness that would be highly beneficial. And so if you have any level of awareness about how you could benefit from being more in touch with your higher self, and you have any interest in learning the tools that Michael and Jeannie teach, give us a call, 563-999-3581. While we cannot do psychic readings, we can guide you through a worksheet process or help you hone in on what Michael calls the mind shifter tool, which is what I call targeted journaling. And that is a very powerful tool, and it's striking me right now that somebody in our group last night had a mind shifter that evolved from the conversation we were having, and oddly enough, it's directly in line with today's Course in Miracles lesson, because it has the has the concept of defensiveness or the need to defend or the right to be defended in that mind shifter. So if you have a life situation going on that is challenging and or you just want to learn how to apply these tools a little bit more efficiently in your life, give us a call, 563-999-3581. And call that number and press 1. We had somebody else in our support group last night that was talking about how she's excited and she knows that she's going to be past the worst of her coronavirus restrictions when she gets to go to a family constellations workshop. And the family constellations work is the psychodrama, the group psychodrama that happens based on the observation that, as Mark Wolin's book talks about, it didn't start with you. Your life didn't come from a vacuum. You are in the presence of, and you are being affected by, the mental emotional energies, the traumas, the strengths, the skills of all the generations that preceded you. And that family constellations work is something that helps the individual, whether you're doing this by reading Mark Wolin's book, It Didn't Start With You, and starting to analyze your own speech patterns, or if you're lucky enough to live near someone or travel to someone who is giving a family constellations workshop, and you get to be with a group of other people who engage in that psychodrama to help you become aware of and begin to work with some of the deeper cross-generational patterns that every one of us has been exposed to. And it's the strengths in our family bloodline as well as the limitations and the traumas. And as we talk about so much in this work, I can only affect change in. I can only work with those things I am consciously aware of. That's why so many of Dr. Michael Rice's tools, as Michael and Jeannie make them available at whyagain.org, that's why they're either tools to illuminate and show me the, we'll call them unconscious patterns, meaning the parts of my life experience that some part of me has decided I can't handle, so I'm hiding it from myself, because it doesn't matter whether I can see it or not. I'm sorry. Hey, what matters is if I cannot see it, and it becomes the strongest resonant frequency in my energy system, that is what will drive my behavior. So I might say, I really hated the way my father raged and or blamed me for all of his emotions, and I would never want to do that to my son or daughter. And I'm going to refuse to be like my father. And then I turn a blind eye to anything that I say or do that echoes what my father did with me. And I might have siblings around that accuse me of being just like my father, and I fly into a rage and I say, I am not like my father, and I refuse to accept any hint that I'm as bad as he was or even like him. And as I do that, I ensure that I will be duplicating closer and closer, the more I get older, my father's patterns. And only by being willing to see how I get to be more and more like both of my parents every day I'm alive, only by being willing to observe in the moment when it arises these patterns will I be able to affect a change in them. What I am blind to, I am powerless to change. So whether it's the reality management worksheet or the mind shifter tool or the three early memories of conflict, each of these is designed to either help me become aware of the unconscious patterns and some of the things that I've inherited from the generations, and or start to dismantle the negative impacts on my life that arise from functioning from those false beliefs. I am unlovable. I am guilty. I am a bad person. I am stupid. I am not smart enough. I can't trust my decisions. I deserve to be punished. Any of these negative beliefs we can instantly recognize as false, and if we're willing to use the tools, we can start to dismantle. I don't deserve to be protected. I don't deserve to have somebody stand up for me. I don't deserve to be happy in my life because I wasn't able to prevent my kindergarten teacher from dying of cancer. That's another one I encountered today with a young man. He's 17 years old, and he remembers that when his kindergarten teacher got cancer and died, he felt responsible. He felt like he wasn't a good enough student. He felt like at one point maybe they were just making that a lie that she had died so that she didn't have to come back and put up with him in the classroom because he, you know, he was an active kid and what they, you know, many people would call attention deficit disorder or hyperactive. But as is true with most of those people who get that label, this was an emotionally intelligent, emotionally sensitive person with some, you know, intellectual capacity that was at least average and sometimes significantly beyond average, who just wasn't meant to sit in a classroom behind a desk and do rote memorization and replay of facts. This is a creative person. This is a hands-on learner. This is a person who's passionate about being a good person, but also has a healthy dose of skepticism built right into the personality. So this is not somebody who would ever have fun in school, because school would basically be torture for this person. And here he has a memory of being in school and not liking it, liking the teacher but not liking the structure, and then learning that she died and absolutely downloading the belief that it was his fault at, you know, 5 years old. So, Ellen, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Dr. Tim. I have been thinking a lot about so-called death since Monday, Memorial Day, you know, which is a day that we honor those who died. And, you know, it really occurred to me that, okay, well, no one really loses their life. They lose their body. They certainly don't lose their life. And it's like what we call life, you know, as opposed to what it really is, you know, the personal life anyway, is just, it's a story. So when someone appears to die, you know, this is what I was thinking about, is that, well, they lose their body and they lose their story, none of which is real. But to think that we consider our life, our personal life, the real life, you know, which is, I'm just seeing the insanity more and more of that. And today's lesson and yesterday's lesson in A Course in Miracles really talks about that. I love that in today's lesson we talked about the ending of the story. You know, he starts out the lesson talking about how terrifying it is, you know? And, you know, you can bring this to an end, and it's, you know, the power of your decision, which was, you know, yesterday's lesson. And I love that part in yesterday's lesson where he says, decide but to accept your rightful place as co-creator of the universe, and all you think you made will disappear. What rises to awareness then will be all that there ever was, eternally as it is now. And it will take the place of self-deceptions made but to usurp the altar to the Father and the Son. And so there's just been this theme going on with me lately. You know, it started with just the fact that it was Memorial Day, and then I keep noticing these sections in the lessons talking about this very thing where it's like we have to be willing to give up the story that's just, it's scary and it's not even true, in order to be aware of our actual life, you know, which, you know, we can't even imagine. It's not something that you can imagine. And I've been just playing a lot with this whole, you know, I guess I've just been trying to drive it home to myself, this whole concept of the of death and how false it is, and, you know, catching myself feeling sorry for things when it appears that they have died and saying, oh, wait a minute, there you go again. It's no, no. And then it's like instantly that sadness and that guilt, because if, you know, I was the cause of it, especially, then there's going to be the guilt. It just lifts because it's not true. It's simply not true. And so I just wanted to bring up this whole distinction between the story and our life, because I think those get really mixed up. We think that the story is our life, and it's not.
Well, I certainly have to agree. And at the same time, you know, I think that so many of us, especially when we're first getting introduced to this work, are operating from a level at which that deeply spiritual existential truth isn't really relevant, because we're stuck battling with how do I pay the mortgage, or how do I relieve the pain, the physical pain, or how do I get a night's sleep when I can't sleep at night and I can't function well the next day. And the benefit that comes from realizing, not thinking about, but actually realizing the truth behind what you're bumping into here is beyond words, and could be liberating for every one of us beyond words. And yet most of us need some work to get to the point where we can even start to acknowledge that realm of experience. Most of us are so tied to the sense of the physical. Most of us have been so thoroughly conditioned to the idea of death and loss that it's quite an uphill struggle for us to change those thought patterns or those belief systems.
Yeah, and so, even if you've had experiences that show you otherwise, you know, it's still, because I have had that, and it's still, like, I still have to keep reminding myself, no, it's simply not true.
Yeah, and it's like, in part, I have to keep reminding myself because I've been practicing the other belief for so many decades. Mm-hmm. And as the neuroscientists tell us, neurons that fire together, wire together, and these neural pathways become so well practiced that I have any thought that's even closely related to this big false thought pattern, and all of a sudden I fall down the rabbit hole of that negative thought pattern, and I believe it, it feels true, and it starts to create my emotions and my thought structure for days or weeks even. And Diedrich Wolzak, who talks about the analogy of the rainforest. And, you know, it is absolutely possible to carve an entirely new path in the rainforest. But it's a lot of work. You got to get the sharpened machete out there, and you got to start hacking away as you carefully step. And if you do that day after day, and you get at it every day, you can create an absolute viable, you know, noticeable path through the rainforest. But as soon as you get tired and say, I want to rest, and you take a week or two off, you go back, you may not even find the path. It's going to be so overgrown. And that's like the habit of thought in our mind is so well practiced that if we're not vigilant, the way something like the Course in Miracles workbook lessons calls us to be vigilant, if we're not intentionally focused every day on what we're doing with this creative force that we have that we call mind energy, or some people call it thought, if we're not focused on what we're doing with it, creating positively with it, the old pattern sweeps back in and it seems like, oh my gosh, I feel like I'm starting all over again. Which is why there's a lesson for every day of the year, which is why most people who've experienced the Course in Miracles say they're doing it for the fourth or fifth or 17th time. It's not that they have to do it for the second to the 118th time because it doesn't work. It's because when they stop, the clearing, the cleansing, the experiencing from that healthier perspective, the old pattern that is so well rehearsed kicks in almost instantaneously.
Yeah.
So we have to keep at it, and we have to acknowledge the benefit of doing it, and then train ourselves to observe, right? Because many of us have been so trained into the negative that we convince ourselves of the opposite of the truth. It's like Pam Grout says, the truth of this lesson is 180 degrees in the opposite direction of everything she's been conditioned to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I am in perfect safety. I was created in perfect safety, and I will always be totally and perfectly safe. In my defenselessness, my safety lies. She says, it lies 180 degrees from everything my culture teaches me. I have been so deeply conditioned, and who among us hasn't been deeply conditioned into concepts of good versus evil, perpetrators versus victims? I have to conquer the patriarchy and push back against corporate greed, and I have to punish the evildoers, and if I don't, fill in the blank, right? And we've all been conditioned to believe a host of negative things are going to happen if we aren't out there fighting evil in ourselves and others.
Yeah, it's so true. And we always are on the side of the victim, not recognizing that it's all the same coin. Doesn't matter which side you're on.
Right, and the creation of a belief in the need to either be the victim or save the victim or punish the perpetrator is what creates the vulnerability. It's all an illusion. There is no vulnerability that doesn't come from a false belief.
Yeah.
Right? You could say that 100 times over. There is no vulnerability that does not come from a false belief.
Yeah, and I can tell you for myself, like, I had no idea how unsafe I felt. Like, it was something I actually had hidden from my, I must have hidden it from myself because I had no idea that I felt
that. But we
so
have
insane.
To. We all have to, or we wouldn't be able to function.
Yeah, I guess
how
so.
Well do you, how well do you function when you're in the middle of abject terror? Not too well, right?
Yeah.
Right, absolutely. And so we have to hide that from ourselves in order to function in the world at all.
Yeah, and I'm seeing, like, it's so funny because I remember, I don't know, I guess I was in my 30s, and I remember a male friend of mine coming over to my house, and he's like, oh, you know, aren't you afraid living here alone? And I was like, no. And he's like, well, don't you have, like, a bat or something, like, by the door in case? And I was like, no. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, to live like that in fear, I wouldn't be able to take it. And so, I mean, for years and years, I mean, I never really took any precautions. I always felt safe. And then just a few years ago, in my 50s, it really came to light. How terrified I am, like, underneath it all. Something happened, and I went right down that rabbit hole, and I was afraid to walk out my door. I mean, I was terrified. And I remember, because I had, it was this, I was convinced that there was a rabid cat lurking around my house. Because I experienced this cat that started acting like it had rabies. And I had no idea where the cat was. And, you know, of course, I had to do all this research on, like, what it, you know, to make sure that's what it was. Like, how do they act? And they try and, you know, act normally to get you to come pet them. And then they attack, right? So... I'm like terrified, right? I'm like
the rabid cat is going to act normal just to get you to come pet it. That is beautiful.
What this is what the disease does to their brain.
That's
so
wonderful.
Anyway, so here I am terrified, and I was like, but I had to go out. There's something I had to do out in my garden, and it was a part of my garden that's the farthest, it's all the way at the fence, all the way at the end of my yard. And so I was so terrified to go out there, and I thought, well, I have to bring something, you know. So I took this big broom and I held it tight up against me in case this cat was going to leap out and attack me, right? So, and I mean, it's embarrassing for me to even tell this story because of how afraid I was. But this is what really brought it to light, that I had this fear inside that I didn't even know that I had. I remember I got out to the end of my yard, and I'm standing there just shaking. And all of a sudden, on the other side of the fence, there's an alley. And it's the time of day where all the kids are coming home from elementary school. And they start walking up the alley, and they're laughing and joking. And I thought... wow, they don't know that there's a rabid cat in the neighborhood.
That they're about to die.
And all of a sudden it occurred to me, because I was like, wow, I wish I were them. I wish I didn't know that. And then it was like, oh, my God, what are you doing to yourself? Like, I got it. Like, it was like, oh. My God, you know, but it was like such an experience because it showed me how unsafe, like, I really was underneath it all. You know, I thought I was so brave and so fearless, and that wasn't true at all. It was just hidden underneath. And I remember the first time I did the course, and today's lesson was the one that stood out for me as my favorite amongst all the lessons because it talks to our safety. And, you know, it's like, wow. Wow. It's just the opposite, like you said, of everything that we've been taught, to stand defenseless. And
to stand
so,
in your perfect safety.
Yes. Yes.
To stand and breathe into the experience of your perfect safety, which can't be thought yeah. about, right? It is not the product of thought.
Yeah. And what's so interesting with that about that particular story is the way that it ended. I did end up seeing the cat. I knew, like, if I waited 10 days and the cat was still alive, that he wouldn't have had rabies. And I just kept praying that, like, I made it all up. There's really nothing wrong with him. And not only did the cat show up again after 10 days, but for the first time, and this is a cat I had been seeing, like, since for months, I thought it was a brother of a stray I took in. And it had this huge wound on its side, and, you know, and I assumed that it was a stray. Not only did this cat re-show up in my yard, but it had a collar on. And there was one thing attached to that collar, and it was a rabies certificate. And I was like, oh, my God. Not only, like, do I know that this cat doesn't have rabies, but I know that he was inoculated against rabies. It was quite an experience. And then
well,
I became very friendly with this cat.
Well, the core lesson there is, for those of us who have the eyes to see and the ears to hear, is we create all of our own fear. We create,
exactly.
without exception, every psychological fear we experience.
Yeah, and I went back to the beginning, like when I first had the idea that there was something wrong with this cat, because I was in the garden and it showed up and I was talking to it, and then all of a sudden it started making these really like yowling and shaking and make... And the first thought was, there must be something wrong with the cat. Now, one of my own core beliefs about myself as a child was, there must be something wrong with me. So I went right down, instead of seeing that thought and saying, no, that can't possibly be true, there is nothing wrong, I went with the thought. And that thought fed the next thought. And it just blew up into this huge episode and it was so funny too, because I even called, like, well, I was convinced by some animal rescue people that I had to call animal control. And when I tried, which I really didn't want to do, but when I tried calling animal control, it turned out that, like, they had just left for the holiday weekend. It was like a Thursday night and the next day was Good Friday. And they weren't going to be back until... So then it was like, I knew at that point. I'm like, this is all about my own stuff. Like, no one's going to come to my rescue. This is my stuff to deal with, you know? It became so clear.
Well, bless your heart, and congratulations for that realization and the lovely story, which really helps drive it home, that we are the ones creating our fears.
Mm-hmm.
And if we get tired of it and we want to see the truth of our existence and our perfect safety, it's always there to be observed. So we have reached the end of the hour. I thank you again for the call and helping us pass the time. And I will mute you and get ready for the transfer of the mantle of authority over to Jeannie Rice. Happy Eternal Day. I'll remind us all that we come from love.
Thank
We're
you.
Made of this stuff we call love. We actually our love, and everything else is false. What are you doing special for your birthday today?
Well, I got up at 6:30 this morning so that I could get online with India, trying to get the app squared away, and I've been on with them till about an hour ago. So about
you sure know,
6
you
hours.
You sure know how to party.
I
You're
know.
A party animal.
I tell you. My son has to work till close tonight, so Michael said he would take me and my dad out to eat. So other than that, that's it. But thank
All
you
right.
for the birthday wishes.
You're very welcome and deserving. Blessings.
Thank you. All righty. Welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Wednesday, June the 2nd, 2021, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that'll put you into queue to talk to us, and we would love to hear your comments and questions because that makes it your show, and it makes it more interesting, and it keeps us from having to do a monologue. And so we would love to hear your questions, so press 1. Give Michael just a moment to get in, and I'll say the other thing that I've been doing today. I've got two computers in the living room, so I've had India on one computer working on the app, and then I've had the new website up in the admin section on the other computer trying to fix broken links. So when we first got the new website up, we had something like 2,800 broken links, and I've got it down to 1,300, so I'm making headway. And so the new website is up. It's still whyagain.org, and a lot of the things are still there so that you're familiar with, like the Start Here button still in the upper left corner. You have to scroll down a little bit to get to the bullseye, but it is there. The apps and the book and the radio show, the archives, all of that is still there. And thank you, Susan Giles. She has done a great job. It looks really pretty. It's more modern. It's clean. There's big buttons right in the center when you first go onto the website that takes you, like, the Why Again book, free in 8 languages, that's first up, and then the radio show, free to listen, wake-up sheets, and so you click there, and it'll take you to just the wake-up sheets, the reality management sheets. A little further down, or when you hit the bullseye or start here, you go to where all of the sheets are for all of the workshops, communication and all of that, so they're in a little different place. Then there's the videos to stream and the CDs and DVDs and books, and then there's an intro link for people that aren't familiar with the work that it'll take them and kind of give them a heads up. There's just lots and lots of things that are different. The mailing list form, she's also got a place on there for one-on-one support. Then down at the bottom, there's still the videos and all that we had before, and the testimonials are still there. But it definitely looks different, and it's absolutely beautiful. So if you find something, like I said, I am working on it and fixing broken links and things, but if you find something that's not working, then please let me know. Let me check on Michael and see why he's not on the switchboard yet. All right. He's got sidetracked there for a moment, and he'll be right with us. So 563-999-3581 and press 1. And we'd love to hear from you. So thank you for all the birthday wishes. And let's see, Magda's trying to call me. Maybe she's telling me there's some kind of issue. So I'm going to hold you just a moment and check. All right, so she was actually just going to leave me a message. She said, I didn't mean for you to answer the phone. So anyway, but thank you, everybody, for the birthday wishes. I appreciate that. And so if you have a question or a comment or something going on that you would like support with, hopefully Doug will call back in. We had an excellent conversation with him yesterday afternoon at the end of the radio show, and so hopefully he'll call back in and press 1 and continue the processing on that. He was doing a fantastic job. And speaking of Magda that just called, this coming Sunday from 2 to 4, those of you who are part of the Codependence Intensive, we will be having our next responsibility communication with Chuck and Magda, and they'll be going over, you know, the process that they had from the first communication that they did. So you all that are part of that intensive, be sure to be part of us on Sunday. Bring your questions for them. I'll be sending out an email later today reminding you of all of that and reminding you of the link. And then we'll have one more next Sunday, and that will be the going over the new PowerPerson worksheet and completing that section of the intensive. So it's been awesome. We've had a lot of people that have said that they would like to do the laws of living next, if we would do that. So we're getting that together. On the website, you'll also find we're offering a kind of self-serve intensive. We've got all of the hours videos from the first two online intensive we've done. And so if you participate in that, it's the cost of that is $600. You'll get the links for all of the videos from the two intensives, and it's self-study, so you're on your own to watch them at your leisure. You know, you can do a whole bunch in a row, or you can just do one a week or one a day or whatever. And then what that does is if you've participated in that, the next time we do a live codependence to interdependence, your $600 goes towards the cost of that live intensive. So that is already on the new website, so you can go ahead and get registered for that if you're interested, or get in touch with Michael. And I hear Michael on the phone now, so welcome.
My apology. I was in the middle of a nap and did not hear my alarm go. So, excuse me, everybody. Delighted to be here. And speaking of the codependence to interdependence communication practicum intensive, I've been just, if Magda's there, thank you, Magda. I've just been having a blast going back through our codependence, or pardon me, our communication practicum session, in which Magda and Chuck agreed to do some responsibility communication. And because it was so profound, we ended up setting up a second bonus session for that particular topic, and we're going to be doing that on Sunday. So it was interesting, the codependence, the communication practicum is a workshop I've been doing for, I don't even know, 20 years or more. And the worksheet for it hasn't changed in that long, or there have been maybe minor changes. But as a result of the session, Magda just opened the space for some really sweet insights and understandings, and so I'm actually going through that and editing the instruction set for it, and we'll be sending it out. In fact, Jeannie, I'll send you a link, or maybe you've got it handy, a link for the session from the intensive. Well, maybe we could go ahead and put that in the notes, and if anybody wants to watch it, it's just really, to me, just an exciting new insight, new level of interaction on this responsibility communication. So that's pretty cool. Thank you. Thank you, Magda and Chuck. Very sweet. And our reading for today is from, of course, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And What You Can Do About It, a book which, if you would like, you can go to our website and download a free copy. It's out of print, so it's not available anymore. Except you can get used copies of it. Way back in 1995 when we published it, we put out several, I don't even know how many, tens of thousands of copies around the country. And so used copies are showing up by the dozen on eBay and on Amazon. So you can order the book from those places, usually for a couple, three, four, five, $6. And it's a deal. So you can order that and read along with us, or as I say, you can download from the website a copy of the book. We're on page 76 for anybody who's reading along. It's the chapter on entitled Off the Mark, which is the definition in the Aramaic language of the word sin. Probably of all the conversations I've had about the Aramaic concepts and the correction of the Greek tomfoolery that passes as scripture, that's been one of the most profound. So many people have been burdened by this idea of sin from the Greek pantheon of gods that pretends to take the place of the creator. And that word sin in Aramaic is an archery term. It simply means off the mark. It's a piece of information that, you know, if you're engaging in an energy that's off the mark, you damage yourself. And when you realize that and you get back on track with the actual definitions of the word, the words that come out of the first century Aramaic, it just makes life so much easier. It was interesting. I was listening to G's dad oftentimes in the mornings. We'll watch different preachers on TV. So I sat down with him this morning. We were listening a little bit, and I was just shocked to hear a guy who, you know, appears to be a bona fide preacher. And he comes out with the phrase, "If you don't do what God wants you to do, God's going to hurt you." And it was just like, oh, my God, what insanity that so much fear and so much terror and trauma by these Greek translators who've so misrepresented what happened in the words of Yeshua, as though love, the Creator, could possibly have any kind of fantasy or volition that I'm going to hurt you because you don't do what I want you to do. And I almost stopped to look up how to write to this guy and say, excuse me, sir, I got your projection. So what you just told us is that if people don't do what you want them to do, you hurt them. Please let go of believing that God is the Creator, that love has any concept that matches your personal insanity. It's just ridiculous. But anyway, this idea of off the mark is the Aramaic term sin. You know, you fired the target on the archery range. You missed the target, bullseye. Struck your PL, off the mark. If you miss the target altogether, the scorekeeper would yell, evil. Like, you missed. You know, take another shot. It's the oppressiveness of man's mind projected into the mind of the Creator is just outrageous. And no wonder so many people live in this world of atheism and denial of a Creator. With the travesties and tragedies that have been put into the Creator's mouth. And we're moving into the Aramaic idea of the word law. And so I'm offering this character, Richard, who I'm having this conversation with. In the Aramaic understanding, the law and its prophets hang upon the condition of love in the mind, not on fear, which produces unconsciousness and error. Without the condition of love continuously present, the searching mind will project its own errors into that which it studies and onto whatever it sees. Only a mind connected to love has healed its capacity to project and hold a true spiritual perspective on life. Only that mind can understand the law and its prophets. You know, you look at that word law in Aramaic, and, you know, the Greeks, we hear it's, you know, it's some sort of an oppressive set of rules that have been placed upon you to make sure that you do right and you do good. Where, in fact, the word law in Aramaic simply speaks of, here's the way things work. And, you know, here's another atrocity men have done. And that is, they've told us, well, the law is over. We now have a new covenant, and the law is done. Excuse me? Not, as Yeshua said 2,000 years ago, not one jot or tittle, and that means the smallest character area. Not one bit of it's ever going to change. It simply describes the way life works. Of course, we have men who lay down the law, men who are going to be the authority, and they're going to beat the hell out of somebody if you don't do what you're told to do. So far off base with this whole idea in the Aramaic language. So again, only a mind connected to love has healed its capacity to project, can hold a true spiritual perspective on life. Only that mind can understand the law and the prophets. All others will distort their mind's view of the scriptures by projecting their own pain, fear, hate, and or rage into them. This produces a mind so insane that it can conceive of punishment, torture, and murder in the name of love, and conceive of that as logical, reasonable, and quote-unquote, a holy thing to do. It's mind-boggling when you have the brain cells of what Yeshua was talking about, and then you listen to what men say and what men try to replace truth by giving people their misunderstanding and pretending that their misunderstanding is truth. So we're here to understand how the mind works, how life works, literally how the law works. We have to do a whole intensive session considering that as our next intensive called Laws of Living. And we look at the understanding from the Aramaic of how sanity is restored to a mind. When you go into the Aramaic scriptures, well, one of the documentation pieces that we have of the power of true understanding of it is we took Laws of Living. It was actually originally designed to go into the prison system. And in the Atlanta Federal Penitentiary, we cut recidivism by over 90% with Laws of Living. The local sheriff in Albany, Georgia, this goes back a couple of decades ago, became so upset at the emptying of his jails that he eradicated Laws of Living from it. When people understand how the energy system works, it's like it's just natural to function within it. One doesn't do the crazies that come from misunderstanding and not knowing what was said. So if you're, that's another intensive we're considering doing. It'll probably be, I'm not sure, maybe in the fall, looking at doing that, probably a 16 or 18-week intensive. So if you're interested in that, you can let Jeannie know, drop her a note at J-E-A-N-I-E at whyagain.org. Jeannie at whyagain.org, and let her know you're interested. Give us your phone number, your name, and I'll touch in with you and see if it's something you want to register for. And other than that, we are here to create as deep a level of support of this process of first century, in particular first century Aramaic forgiveness and the understanding of the law and make it as available as we possibly can across the globe. So delighted that you're here to be part of the conversation. And if you have a comment for us or something we can support you with, some point which needs refined, we're here to provide as much support as we can possibly do. So if you're out there in listener land and you're listening to the show and perhaps one of those stations where we can't see you in our control panel, if you call into the show, the phone number 563-999-3581, you'll be listening to the show. And if you have a question, all you have to do is push one, and you and I will be having a conversation. So we'd be delighted to hear from you. Which one? Let's have a conversation. Christine?
We have
Happy Eternal Day to you,
today.
Sweetheart.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that. So we've got Doug with us, hopefully, to continue the conversation from yesterday, which was awesome.
Oh,
welcome,
sweet.
Doug.
Hello there. Happy birthday.
Hey there, good sir. Welcome.
Thank you.
Well, I imagine after yesterday's conversation, you were in some deep process, so I'd love to hear what's happening.
Well, I wasn't very happy camper for a while yesterday and even into this morning, but I'm much better now. And, a few things on this been working on this mind shifter.
And what's it moving for you, Doug?
Well, the first thing that it moved, which the mind shifter was, where was that? It is safe and healing, easy for me to behave in a way that brings joy and aliveness to my relationship with my first thing that came up, which is kind of interesting to me, is that I have no desire to behave in a way that that forces, gets, cause, drives Diane to love and care about me, you know, or persuade her into that, you know, because, but yet I see that I kind of expect from her sometimes, and, you know, I don't want to perform according to the demands and judgments of another, and so it's gain their approval, et cetera, et cetera. I just want to be loved because of who I am. And that was, you know, that was pretty good for me to see that sort of thing. And then further on, coming down, I'm being driven to behave for approval, you know, by my own, not by anybody else, but, you know, I'm, of course, imagining that other people are doing it to me, and it's all out of my own sense of lack of need, or sense that I need approval from women to survive and to thrive. And so I'm just finding all this enlightening and interesting, and I realize that.
Big breath.
Yeah. That I, you know, I don't, another thought was I don't want to have to perform like a trained monkey to get someone's approval. Stuff like that. Clearly from, you know, childhood, you know, feeling like I had to behave in certain ways and presenting it. At some point in my process, I know somewhere, I'm not finding it right now, but somewhere in there was that I realized that I really, what I need is to simply, wish I could find it, find that I can and am thriving on my own, you know, out of my own solid connection to sports. And not that I need to have somebody else in my life in order to feel like I'm surviving and thriving on my own, you know, in any way. And then further sustain that experience even once I'm in relationship. So that, so I just feel a need to focus on that sort of out at this point, like, provide, you know, not being sort of creating this codependence that I need be surviving and thriving through or with or somebody else, you know, it's like I just need to do it on my own and then maintain that with God, you know, out of my own source. So that's some of what's gone on for me. Oh, I guess the final important realization was that it must be that any action I take, that any performance or action I do that brings joy and aliveness in my relationship has to be that for me. There should be no separation. It's not like I should be doing something performing in some way that brings joy and aliveness to somebody else, but suffering and unhappiness to me. I mean, these two things clearly need to be one. And then I found it entertaining how often in relationships, particularly between men and women, it devolves into a situation where we're in conflict constantly over that, feeling like, you know, both parties want the other person to do something that party doesn't want to do. And that just seems so upside down and backwards. So that's my experience at the moment.
So I noticed that you have a link, it would appear, between doing things that create harmony and pleasure in your relationship makes you a trained monkey. That was the words I heard. And
that was definitely one of the non-being thoughts.
One thing that came up, yeah. And maybe if you've been functioning out of some self-deprecating thoughts and the need to function as approval, maybe resolving that behavior as a trained monkey and letting loose of that as a concept would open a deeper space for you to just function as a human being, just to function out of being. And that's going to produce all the awesome and wonderful results you could possibly imagine and would have nothing to do with having to function a certain way that somebody demanded in order to approve of you. That might be a place to do some worksheets and to, because I can certainly imagine, you know, if I think about that myself, if I think that in order to be approved of, I have to function like a trained monkey, then, you know, boy, I'm sure not doing that, whatever it is. When the truth is, it's functioning as a human being, so it's a natural thing in the world, and of course would have nothing to do with having to do what you're told to do or forced to do, whatever that issue's about.
Yeah, so working towards just figuring out that thought that I need to function as a trained monkey or something and focusing on clarity of freedom to function as a human being. Right?
Yeah, just functioning as who you are. I mean, who you are is going to be absolutely, totally, completely acceptable to anybody that you're interacting with. And when we're not functioning as who we are, that's when, you know, we find ourselves in a space of being disapproved of, perhaps disapproving of ourselves and the beliefs that go along with messages that came from a power person. And so that might be a good worksheet or two to do, or there might be a few worksheets to do on that. And,
right.
You know, the most natural thing in the world is to function as who we are until we've got a power person dynamic that, you know, then the power person dynamic runs our world.
And you know, even if we are functioning as who we are, that's not any guarantee that other people are going to accept us, and unless they're functioning out of who they are, right, out of the love they are. Because it seems to me that a God could be functioning out of who they are, and their power person could be functioning out of something other than love and find their behavior unsatisfactory.
Yep.
Right.
So then, is there a turnaround here that what you're really saying is you want somebody else to function as a trained monkey in order to please you? That would be the upshot of that response. And maybe recognizing that it's safe and healing for you to simply function as who you are and for them as well. And that's going to lead us to our natural state of approval and aliveness and joy and fulfillment.
Yeah.
And I know for myself personally that the only time I've found myself in conflict in my relationships is when I am not functioning. Or I'm expecting someone else to function in and according to my power person demands. And when I let that go, you know, when I awaken to who I am, the natural result is simply human life. And it frees us from the demands of our power person as well as frees us making the same demands on others that our power person made on us. You remember the power person dynamic, once it's instilled in the mind when we're under stress, what we're going to tend to do is whatever our power person did to us that we hated the most. And that's probably not going to be very acceptable to anybody. When I choose to forgive that, when I let loose of that, the natural result is to just function as who we are.
Certainly. Okay. Good.
So the truth about you, the truth about Diane, is you're both created in the image and likeness of love, and there is no conflict in that self. It's when we forget that that's who we are, and then we start making, you know, the equivalent of our power person demands on ourselves and others, is when the conflicts occur. And of course, you know, most everybody has been through that power person game, and so has those inclinations in mind, and those inclinations to function out of the power person dynamic. Again, it's a matter of forgiving those dynamics to allow the truth of who we are to show up. One of the things one of the insights I got from working with Magda and Chuck on this video, I've just been working on that this morning and rewriting the instruction sheet for responsibility communication, is recognizing that when we live in a perceptual mind where there's a capacity for hostility and fear, all of our so-called thinking, everything that resonates and moves in us, is going to tend to lead to conflict. And when I move into telling the truth to myself, speaking to myself and others out of who I am, my mind is going to automatically heal. I'm going to bring my mind to truth rather than living in the lie of the false demands of the power person. And that's where responsibility communication becomes such a key in the codependence work. And I am just getting ready to send you a link to the responsibility communication session that we did. It will be in the notes, but also it's being sent to you, so you've got an easy link to that. And maybe that'll help open the space on a new level and just in the middle of your inquiry.
Right. So you know, it's like when we're not functioning out of love and we're functioning out of, it's like I can just see how for my own self, if I'm not functioning with love, that's when I feel, and that leads the whole thing of feeling like I need, you know, whatever, something in relationship or from relationship, or that I cannot survive without it, or thrive without it. All of that is rising out of those false thoughts, firstly, that's myself. And I realize I'm connected to love with that. And that leads to all the demands, or and for the other person too. The interesting thing is how to, I guess, thing I want to say, like, maintain oneself as love when another person isn't their loving state. That's the original condition I was talking about as a child. Couldn't the child be functioning with love and their power person not be, and so then they're coming at the child with non-loving behavior that is difficult to deal with? And cannot that happen to us as adults, both to give it to another and receive it? You know, like, if our partner's not feeling loving, then they're going to be making demands on us. Or if we're not feeling ourselves as a love, we're going to be making demands on them. I need more skill in being able to deal with that and stay in a loving state.
Well, here's my take. As an adult, if I'd have entered into the practice of functioning as love, and somebody's coming at me with something other than love, unless there's something, some kind of lie in me that I'm hiding that gets triggered by that person, I'm probably going to be able to stand as a space of love. But that doesn't seem to be the natural thing for the child to do. You know, generations and generations and generations of programming in hostility or fear. The tendency for the child when under the stress of, you know, accepting the power person's instruction is for them to go into survival mode. Now, literally, the child goes into a parasympathetic dominant state where the energy system shuts down, the energy field opens wide, and literally, just like a sponge, sucks in everything going on in the environment. So the parent's in a raging condition. The child, because the parent is literally the source of survival, perceives this threat as survival mode, and they just, you know, it's like the field just opens and, you know, like a sponge just sucks everything in that's going on. If there's rage, fear, blame, guilt going on in the environment, the child just receives that energy and it imprints on the child. And until that dynamic is discovered within the mind and forgiven, whenever that energetic dynamic is activated, they will tend to replicate the power person's behavior. Not having an independent will, but simply experiencing themselves as an extension of the parent, usually the parent, although not always, but an extension of the power person, and subject to the possibility that they will not survive that situation. They go back into that survival mode. And in the survival mode, the ability to thrive is gone. You know, the parasympathetic system is shut down, or at least, because they're actually not two separate systems, they're a continuum. But the parasympathetic, which is the open, connected, loving field that is natural to us, is closed down, and we move toward that, you know, fight, fright, flight, fear mode. And functioning out of that tends to void awareness of the presence of love and behaviors that would come from love. And that's why the responsibility communication, I think if you've got the time, it'd be awesome if you'd give a listen. I'd love your feedback, your thoughts on that session. I think of all the years I've been teaching responsibility communication, this session is one of the absolute best that we've ever done. And it just, when we can shift into brain cells firing that connect to truth, and the mind is brought to truth, then healing occurs. Just a shift of all of those energetic dynamics happens. But as long as the power person dynamic is unconscious and unresolved, every time it's activated, every time it's resonated into activity, it becomes crazy time again. And so the responsibility communication opens space to move from crazy time to sanity. And as I say, I sent you the link to that. I will, when I get it complete, I'm actually working on it right now, a new instruction sheet for the responsibility communication. I'll send that to you as well. Okay. And I sent a copy to Diane. So, you know, both of you looking at that and working on it might help open a new space.
All right.
What I'm getting out of reviewing this piece of the work, right now in current events, I've been working on it this morning, is that when I use projection communication, when I have a reality in my mind that's formed by my mind, based in some form of hostility or fear, my mind generates a picture world that is totally, completely internal to me. It is a construct of my own mind, period. And when I accept that construct in my mind, let's say if there's a conflict between you and I accept that conflict, which is being generated by my mind, as true about you, I've got to make up a whole world of lying communication to pretend that my perceptual construct tells me anything about you. I mean, I literally have to live in a whole lie. And I have to tell myself a story that's totally, completely, so far out in left field that it's unbelievable. And I tell myself that story. We've been taught by generations and generations and generations doing that, that that story is true about you, when the truth is the only person it's true about is me, but I've projected it into my brain's image of you. I've used that data, that lie, to build a picture of you, and I believe that my lie is true about you. And I've lost the fact that the lie is true about me. And when I shift into responsibility communication, I'm restored to the truth. And it changes everything.
I'm very curious now to review that responsibility communication link that you sent in order to understand better how that happens, how the freedom happens from, because in, as I'm sitting here, I'm like, how is that going to happen? Exactly with responsibility communication that freedom, you know, can be restored. That's a very powerful concept.
It's monumental. It's magnificent. I'm with you.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, I'm saying this on a personal level, you know, from having developed this tool 20 plus years ago and taught it many, 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 many times since. And as a result of this particular intensive, both Jeannie and I have moved to a new level of doing our work together, of our connection together, of the joy and the aliveness we have together. It's just come to a whole new level, and it's inspired both of us to do a new level of inner work, a new level of trust with each other. That's just been monumental. And in going back and reviewing this, it's just opened a whole different understanding of this communication game that we play. No, my mind generates a picture called perception. My perception is 100% a reflection of the content of my mind. But here's the trick. When I'm in denial and dissociation, everything that is true about me because it's in my perceptual system now gets turned exactly backward into a picture of you. And I believe that picture. Most people believe the perceptions of their own minds, and their perception is totally based in projection. When I literally turn that around and start to tell myself the truth, then I get to see the kind of insanity I've been living out of and blaming you for it, or, you know, whoever the object of attention is. Of course, Jeannie and I have never done any of that with each other in all the years we've been together. But I'm feeling blessed that, you know, we've just opened a new space between us in arriving at, it's just a whole new level of insight. That I, for one, am feeling blessed by, and as I started the show, I'm talking to Magda and appreciating her. You know, Magda has used this responsibility communication tool as one of her favorite tools for at least a decade. And, you know, she and Chuck spent 6 months at Heartland, and I mean, she really worked with the responsibility communication. And then when she agreed to do this role-playing in the intensive, and of course we're doing it on Zoom, so we have a full recording of it, the video. Her work and her willingness to be in a new level of insight and watch her mind doing that is kind of the piece that gave me the, when I do, and I've changed the title. I mean, I haven't changed that worksheet in decades, but I've changed the title of the worksheet or the instruction set to Responsibility Healing Communication. And what that communication does is it restores my mind to truth instead of living in the lie that the world has taught every one of us to live in all our lives. You made me mad. You made me sad. You hurt. Here I am hurting in your presence, so it must be you that hurt me. It certainly wouldn't have been me. Who hurt us? It's the content of my own. I mean, aside of, you know, besides somebody coming up to cancel the thought and punching me in the nose, nobody can hurt me. I mean, that's silly. But if I'm hurting and I say, you hurt me, I have to generate a whole world that's a lie, and I have to make it all your fault. And, of course, if I believe it's your fault, I certainly have nothing to change. So what do? I keep living in the lie. When I shift into responsibility communication, I'm restored to the truth, and it's monumental. That's the insight I'm getting on a new level for me with this tool.
Yeah, I'm starting to understand how it works, like you say. What was that new title again? I like this spot. Responsibility.
Say it again. Responsibility Communication. Oh, Responsibility/Healing Communication. That when I'm in projection communication, I reinforce my disease process. When I move to responsibility communication, my mind is restored to truth. Healing happens.
Right.
Automatically.
Right. Literally, it precipitates forgiveness because it's...
Exactly.
That's so cool. So cool.
It is.
Okay. It really is. I was wondering if you could take a minute to discuss a little more, because I've heard you say it more than once, and said it again today, about how when a child is presented with their whole energy, I want to understand that a little better, how it shifts, opens up, and they become like a sponge to absorb that harmony.
Right. So the power person, our definition of a power person, three key factors enter into the power person dynamic. This is the whole root of the codependence workshop, codependence to interdependence. And first of all, the power person has more power over my life than I did. It's usually a child that's the object of the situation, but not necessarily. I remember working with a man, you know, who'd been involved in this work for several years, and he had never told me this, but there was a point where he was in a store when the store was robbed, and the robber's there with a gun, and he's got the gun pointed at him, and he thinks he's going to be shot. And he just collapsed right into the whole power person dynamic. And this guy was in his early 70s. And he realized, as we were talking about the power person, that, oh, my God, that situation, me being in that store and my life being threatened, was survival. So that's the second thing, that the power person is not functioning as love. And it's perceived as survival by the object of the situation. So three things. One, this person's got more power over my life than I do. Two, they're not functioning as love. Three, I perceive it as survival.
Right.
Somehow what that does causes the energy field to simply open and be a sponge and take in whatever dynamics, whatever energetic dynamics are happening in the environment as just basic facts, basic, this is the way it is. So now that that power person dynamic is installed in a mind forevermore, until that power person dynamic is accessed and forgiven, literally removed, there are only three behaviors possible for the person who is the object of that situation. One, when there's no stress, they will do whatever they did to get along with their power person. So let's say with my power person, what I did was I was Mr. Nice Guy. So here I am, Mr. Nice Guy. Most of the time, people know me as Mr. Nice Guy. Second behavior, when stress starts to build, that person will move out of doing what they did to get along with their power person, and they'll do whatever they did to resist and survive with their power person. So if what I did with my power person when the stress started to build was I moved into being Mr. Snarky and attack, all of a sudden the person that everybody knows is Mr. Nice Guy is being snarky and attacking. Second level of behavior. Third level of behavior, when the person who is the object of that power person dynamic becomes ultra stressed, they will default to doing whatever their power person did to them that they hated the most. So if my power person verbally abused and beat on me and I become ultra stressed, whoever's in my field, I will verbally abuse and beat on them. So there's the three behaviors that run a person's life, all their lives, without awareness of any kind. And it is literally, my take is, that is, it's absolutely the dynamic that runs the world today. And I don't care if you're looking at churches or government or business or education or prison systems, whatever it is, they're the three behaviors that are running the world. And there is no presence of love in any of it. And the work is about restoring us to the presence of love instead of the automatic decision system kicking in and causing us to function out of one of those three dynamics.
Yeah, and so a lot of relationship interaction is going to be coming out of that dynamic, almost all of it under normal.
Almost all of it.
I don't want to call it normal.
Almost all of it.
So the child
makes up a, here's the act I need to do in order to, you know, survive or to interact with my power person. And so being isn't functioning here. What's functioning is, well, let's see. What I figured out when I was three was that if I did this and this and this while my power person did that, then my power person would smile at me and turn away and I'd make it. And so when stress builds, one goes into doing those behaviors. Now, they call those behaviors loving behaviors. I see I'm loving you, but there's no love in any of that whatsoever. It's simply figuring out the way to survive. And the impact on physiology, again, is to move us into the sympathetic dominant state so that literally, and this ties in with the Avison, blood flow shuts down, the capillaries are closed. You know, there's a precapillary orifice at the head of each cap of the 60 billion capillaries in the system. And because in a threat state, the survival mode says, I shut down blood flow so I don't bleed to death if I get attacked, those capillary orifices close down and blood circulation stops. Now the whole system's in deep survival. And if that becomes one's constant state, then nothing in the system, just like at the very basic level, everything in the system is in survival mode. And boy, I hope I live through this threat that keeps me in this sympathetic state. When I can let that fight, flight, fright, fear mechanism loose, I move out of the sympathetic dominant state into the parasympathetic dominant state where microcirculation opens, blood flow happens, and there's a supply throughout the whole system that allows the system to build and thrive rather than just make it through the day and survive. rather than being locked into the high stress mode of interacting with a power person and hoping that I make it through the day.
Yes, okay. I think that two things come to mind, two questions. I know that we're about done. When you said that, I'll stay close to this one first, which is that it would be interesting to create, and maybe there already is a way, but a process or maybe some kind of a sequence for couples to analyze and research with one another, are themselves, our person dynamics, presence, that they just accept they're constantly running in their relationship. And the other thing I'm interested in is asking the question you said when a child is exposed to their power person acting in that way, in that dynamic, they open their whole nervous system and take it in. I'm just going to ask the question, because then maybe the answer will come to us. Why does that happen? That's an interesting dynamic.
What was the question? Your voice got a little fuzzy there.
When you said that a child who's subject to their power person's raging, their whole energy system opens up and takes in everything that's happened. And it's like, why does that happen? You know, I mean, that's some kind of a response that happens in the child.
It's called survival.
And
again, it's dog eat dog, and what do I need to do to live through this dog attacking me? We're thriving, parasympathetic dominant. The field is open. The field is connected to love, and I have the ability to actually reason and select or make choices rather than the automatic decision system kicking in and running the show. And how do you analyze that? Say again?
So their field opens in that situation because they feel it's a matter of survival, and somehow that just wakes up the awareness to absorb everything that's happening in like a lower brain attempt to be able
yes.
to have all the data available in order to see what I need to do to survive.
Survive, exactly. And survival, I mean, you know, survival of the fittest, that whole game, is I want my life to continue, but the cost of my life continuing is I live a short life because this state kills me. There is no access to higher understanding. There is no access to literally God's mind. Because we're stuck in the lower mind wanting to survive. And, you know, it's like the creator standing there with a whole set of instructions. Here, I got some information for you, but there's no ability to hear it because that's the whole thing you shut down. And when one moves from sympathetic dominant to parasympathetic dominant, everything softens, opens, one breathes, one is able to function out of being and get messages from being. And of course, and how do you work through all of that? Well, we just did a 14-week intensive, and we've got two more bonus sessions we're adding to it. The intensive that Jeannie was talking about at the beginning of the workshop, that's the primo, here's how you work through all of that. That's what that whole 14, or actually 16 weeks is about. When we're finished with it, it'll actually be two more weeks before we complete it.
Awesome. Thank you, Mike.
Honored and delighted, my friend. Thanks for opening the conversation. It's awesome.
Okay.
And we are down to the last minute or so I'm just going to say much appreciation to everyone, and we hold the space for each of you to create the best year yet of your eternal life, to truly move from survival to thrival and really, truly thrive. It's what we're designed for. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.